You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I picked up an article online, of course, from a publication called Currency. It's an online South African business publication co-founded by our friend Julieta Televi, my ex-boss. And it's a good publication. They have good full-time writers and they have good contributors as well, one of which is David Shapiro, because he appeared in the last few days with something about diversification. And I read it and I thought, wait a second, this is going to annoy the establishment. Did you get any feedback from it? Because you tell us what you said.
No, I think people get very defensive. My whole point was I used a very interesting example, and I hope I got the school right, but when I was on the Stock Exchange Committee back in the 1980s, in the mid-80s, we used to run a competition, and the whole competition was to try and attract young people, you know, matric or thereabouts, and the standard 9, 10, to become involved in the economy, understand the stock market, the workings. And there was a competition which I don't think there was prize money. It was nothing more than bragging rights and a cup. And you would get a certain amount to invest over a six-month period. And the idea was to invest. And we had these a girls' team from, I think it was Freiburg Hoërskool. I remember Freiburg for some reason or not. And anyway, what they did is they just took the money and bought villages. Now, you might not even remember Villages. Villages was one of these early mines on the Witwatersrand.
Yes.
Near Crown Mines.
And it was depleted. It was mined
totally.
Out.
Totally.
Yeah.
Nothing there. Yeah. Nothing left. I don't know. There might have been the tailings, the dumps or something there that attracted value, or they wanted to use the shell. Anyway, you know, it just went against the grain. And what happened is that 6 months later, they did nothing. They just stood with their or stuck with their villages, and they won the competition. But, you know, being on the committee, everybody started. We had to say, wow, this just wasn't cricket. You know, they didn't build a proper portfolio of dividend-paying stocks and so on. And at the end of the day,
but that wasn't in the rules. They just said, whoever makes the most money, surely.
That's exactly. So, you know, I love this. And even in the competition I run now, which was the Crystal Challenge, which ended Friday the 31st. Yeah, that was the last day. It was a 10-month competition. You had to choose 5 stocks. We had 3 gentlemen, 3 men who didn't know each other.
Yes.
And they all bought gold shares. They bought 5 gold shares, and obviously they won hands down as well, just simply on gold. There was no diversification.
Well, wait a second. There was someone like Neil Froneman or Bernard Swanepoel will say, well, they were diversified. They had 5 different gold stocks.
Yeah. You know, but the rules are, oh, I'm going to put a bank in here. Let me put a retailer in and everything. And they knocked it out. So I wrote an article just on that basis saying, these winners, these people don't read textbooks and they just won because they had an instinct that we never had. They just beat orthodox behavior. So I think that's, markets can be very unpredictable. But what I led to, I said, we all preach diversification. In other words, you've got to spread your risks. The trouble is that if you spread them too widely, you miss out on opportunity. And the point I was trying to make is coming back to artificial intelligence or technology counters. I'm saying, you know, if you would have invested widely spread into 40 stocks, you know, and only a few were AI, you wouldn't have got the full benefit of the growth, you know, because outside of those technology stocks, growth was very stunted. There wasn't really anything you could have got into. You know, so the whole point is that if you concentrate, if you conscientious, do your homework and understand where you're going. Sometimes these concentrated or convicted bids can be far better than spreading too widely.
I came into this business through being a commodity trader and with commodity, yeah. A commodity futures trader, or rather broker. And my attitude always was, when I handled a few clients' money, we'd say, right, we're getting into gold, it's $1,000 an ounce. If it goes down 10%, we'll stop ourselves out. We'll put in a stop loss. And that was it. That was the sort of same theory that you've got. You don't mind if you put everything into something, as long as you have a conviction that it's going somewhere and there is some sort of downside risk. In my case, it was a stop loss. Now, you couldn't have done that with an AI portfolio if you'd have bought it at the beginning of the year, because you would have got knocked out with your stop loss by Liberation Day, and then you would have seen yourself stranded with no position at all because the market went rocketing up to new highs. So it's a difficult one. But David, when do you decide, if you are not diversified, when do you decide that the asset class or the sector that you've chosen is a loser?
You know, it's an interesting point, because especially now, and this is what I've been trying to go through in my mind now, the more I look into the market, I say, okay, I want to diversify. I have been exposed. I mean, I haven't been reckless, not at all. But I've enjoyed some deep concentration. The problem is that, Lindsay, and this is the point that we need to look at and debate, everything today is technology. Yes. Wherever I went looking elsewhere, I said, well, where do I go that is not technology or is not linked to semiconductors or some form of tech? You know, even Apple, the phone. That is our life today, whether you like it or not. You know, without an Apple, not an Apple phone, without a smartphone, you're just not part of the world. You know, you can't communicate, you can't do SMS, whatever, and you can't. It's so much part of our lives. So my point is that well, what do I go to? Procter and Gamble or something, and make nappies or Pampers? You
know, I suppose people will say just as much as an SMS, a text message, or going to Grok or ChatGPT or ChatGPT or Copilot is part of your life when you need to find out the history of the U.S. Civil War. Just eating a Kit Kat or buying nappies from one of these defensive companies, that's also part of your life. So there is, I suppose there is a case to say, sit down with a group of people and say, what can you not do without, and base a portfolio on that?
Yes. I you're coming to a good point. You know, but you've got to have growth. Mm. And where's growth going to come from? The other thing is that, when I look to say, okay, let me diversify from AI, where do I go? And the thing is that if you go back over the last 5 years, our behavior, our patterns have changed so much. You know, we don't eat in restaurants anymore. Yeah, we want to get Uber Eats. That's what I'm saying. You know, you want to go to the movie house? No, or theater? Nah, too much trouble. We'll stream something at home. You know, even presentations, you know, we can't get audiences for presentations anymore. They don't want to come. They'd rather wait and say, we'll watch the recording. Do you know what I mean? Exactly as they're going to do here. They will listen to this podcast in their own time.
Yes.
You know, that's the beauty of it. So I think clothing, we stay at home. People are not even drinking alcohol anymore. They're socializing.
Yeah, where
on WhatsApp.
Did that come from? I mean, I would have thought the people working at home and having more time on their hands, they'd drink more. But no, they're drinking much less.
No, they don't.
It's fallen off a cliff. It's extraordinary. I hardly know anyone that drinks anymore, myself included.
No, and that's the other thing is that I was looking at Reckitt and Benckiser as part of investigating that, which is Dettol and Disprin and a whole lot of other brands. They also do Durex. Intimate products have fallen as well.
Oh.
Demand for intimate. Yeah.
People aren't mating anymore.
No, not at all, because they don't know how to.
Well, yeah.
So if you look at, I think there was something in The Economist this weekend. I haven't looked at it. It's how people are preferring to stay single, even though there's a certain amount of loneliness. You know, their lives, they don't want boyfriends anymore. Or I don't know. A man always wants a girlfriend, but it seems that the women don't want boyfriends anymore.
I can understand that.
too much trouble, too much anxiety.
Well, it started in Japan, of course, when the birth rate started to fall quite sharply and it became of concern to the authorities. And now South Korea is another one where it's not keeping up with the – in order to maintain the population or even grow it slightly, you've got to have 1.8 kids and they're only producing 0.7 or something like that per couple. People – yeah, you're quite right. People don't – people – well, I've never thought that men and women should be together anyway because fundamentally – we're so different. I mean, your marriage is testament to the fact that men and women can get on together because it's lasted for so long. But generally, the majority of people of different genders don't like each other, or rather, can't get on together. But anyway, that's another story. I'm just rambling.
But that's what I'm getting at, is that we've got to now decide, okay, I'm getting out of this. What do I get into? You know, companies that are valued very highly, well, they're under a bit of pressure. The other thing is like, the advertising, and I think so many brands are coming under pressure because advertising or marketing has changed. You know, it's now influencers that you go on to TikTok or you go into Instagram, you go on to those kind of things to find out what products. So everything is everything's been turned upside down.
Anyway,
I'm going through the exercise. Yeah, I'm saying,
what was the reaction from the old school establishmentarians?
Oh, no.
They didn't
I got one snotty, really, which I had to reply to. Yeah. Basically, a chap who said that, you know, it's pathetic that I'm still working at my age.
What's that got to do with it?
Yeah, and basically saying that, and I must have been a pretty useless student or something to that effect because of so there was, and I came back and I said, you're not wrong. No, I wasn't the greatest student. I prefer to draw, to caricature my lecturers, and I prefer to play football for Wits. You know, I was a left winger much more than I enjoyed studying. And I said, yeah, you know, you did right.
But here I am making money for my clients, and
criticizing. I know what they said. I said, you know, you're criticizing my stock picking. That's why it must have been a useless stock picker. I said, that's legendary. I said, because I came in my own competition near the bottom, and I said, my wife, who thinks a PE ratio has something to do with a gym class, you know, beat me by hundreds of places. So you know, you touched a raw nerve there. You were pretty right. So anyway, but I think the establishment get very upset when you challenge their, you know, this spreadsheet way of, this is the way you
must conduct
yourself.
Well, there's so many in South Africa. The financial services industry in South Africa is very well developed, highly sophisticated, well regulated and all those things. But there is a certain group of people that say local is lekker. And I was speaking to a chap who I speak to quite regularly, and he's been a proponent of diversifying offshore, getting as much money offshore as possible. And he's been pilloried for it because it's deemed to be unpatriotic, anti-South African. But it's, of course, a lot of nonsense, David. So okay. I would imagine that, that sort of attitude would have come through with the replies you got to your article.
Yeah. You know what it is? I think people are scared to be wrong. You know, they're scared of being wrong, so they overprotect themselves. They haven't got the courage of their convictions to say, this is where I'm going, this is where I want to focus on. And I think that's you've got to have the confidence in markets to say, look, this is where I want to be. You know, I've never been anti-South African in the sense that if there were South African companies that could stand up on a world, you know, like our rugby team. But I mean, we haven't got those in the market. You know, there's none of our companies here that can stand up to anything that is quoted on, quoted on the NASDAQ or anything like that. You know, they just don't match the kind of skills, or they haven't got the same kind of growth prospects.
South Africa has been left behind. It hasn't been left behind in terms of young people leaving South Africa and working for these companies overseas, but actual development of companies within the borders of the Republic, that simply hasn't happened. Now, let's talk about the companies that you've spoken about, because what's happened is you had AI and there were just a few companies that dominated. Now, it's splintering everywhere. And this is where diversification comes in, because you're going to say to yourself, what about the auxiliary services? It's like an airline starts up. Do you buy the airline or do you buy the companies that service the airline or the hotels at the airport, that sort of thing? So have you got the position, the problem now, David, where you have to look at AI and choose which sector of AI is the future? That's very, very difficult, I would imagine.
That's the danger, is that there are too many businesses coming on that we don't know enough about. And that's where I get nervous, because until you know who's in charge, what they're doing, you know, and have had a decent look at them, I think remain very cautious. So I'm with you in that sense that you don't want to just keep buying every new IPO that comes onto the market, you know, and that's where the danger is. So you've got to continue to do your work, look at the results, look at the earnings numbers that come out, and are the incumbents, are the big companies still holding forth? In other words, still dominating the industry or still doing well? So, Lindsay, that's a very important point, you know, that it does breed a lot of stuff that might not be successful. There's going to be a lot of fallout along the way. So I stick to the main ones, you know, and but it doesn't mean, you know what I keep saying, you can't just press the snooze button, you know, you can't just wake up and press the snooze button. You've got to still be very vigilant, agile, and conscientious, you know, about this. It's not a gimme. It's not just, you know, anything that's got AI attached to it is going
to
win.
Well, that's harks back to the late 1990s, where anything to do with a .com had to be good. I mean, it's a completely different era, of course, and AI is a proper industry that's going to continue to be with us for the rest of certainly our lives and for everybody's life, I would imagine, in the future in various forms. And how can we possibly predict what AI is going to be in 1 year's time, let alone in 20 years' time, in a generation's time? But, David, people have been talking a lot about the bubble, and there have been people from august institutions on Wall Street, investment banks, saying, well, we think there could be a bubble here. And then at the end of last week, people said, oh, we're going to sell this because so-and-so said there might be a bubble. Yeah. And then on Friday, the market was down about 1.5%, the NASDAQ or something, and then I looked at my screen at 9-10 o'clock at night, and it was only down 0.2%. I thought, people said, what are you talking about? There's no bubble here. It's not a tulip. It's not the South Sea bubble. This is real. And if you choose the right company, as you've just highlighted, then just carry on with it. Is that what you're doing?
Until I'm not exiting now. That's the thing. I'm watching very carefully. It's very hard. I think that valuations are stretched, you know, and there might be some companies that but you know what can happen in a situation like that is that they go nowhere and earnings catch up over a year or two or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just being sold off and falling in a heap. And the worry, and I'm coming back to what I've been saying earlier, okay, I'm going to take profits now, Lindsay. I'm going to say I'm getting out now. So where do I go? You know, what do I do with my money? And is there anything else that can offer me the same prospects? And that's where I'm struggling at the moment. You know, with people calling it a bubble and saying, you know, we need to take some profits, that's fine. But I'll go into cash if you want to, that's fine. But I don't think there's anything else. And now I'm coming on to another important point.
Yes.
Do not think if this bubble bursts that you're going to be spared a shower. You know, I think that's the best way I could put it. In other words, if that bubble bursts, believe me, everybody gets hurt, and we've seen that.
Oh, my goodness, the unraveling of the various financial gearing that's going on, if there is a burst of the bubble, is going to be enormous. You can forget about gold. You can forget about bonds. Everything will get slaughtered.
That's what I'm saying. Don't think you're going to be protected. You know, and don't think your little holding of 5% in gold is going to save you. No, it's not.
It's really not. It's going to exacerbate the situation, in fact.
That's it. If this bubble bursts, everybody, it's a tsunami, everybody gets wiped out, you know, taken away with it.
Okay.
So I think that's where perhaps, you know, people, oh, well, if I go into banks, believe me, the fallout, as we saw in 07, 08, and as we saw in 2000, and, you know, when the bubble burst in 2000, the internet bubble, everybody goes. And it's, that, you know, that's the danger. So don't think there is protection out here.
There may be a little bit of air that's let out of the bubble, maybe 7 to 10%, something like that, maybe as high as 15% in some stocks that have come late to the party. But the good quality ones will stay there. I just want to ask you one more question before we wrap this up, David. And that is, if AI brings back your father somehow, and he sits down with you and he says, show me your portfolio, please, son. And he says, well, this is the portfolio. And he says, okay, what's their multiple? What's their PE? You know, you spoke about PE with regards to your wife. Your dad told you about price earnings ratios, didn't he? When he sat you down and on his knee and said, this is what this stock is and this is how we value it. If he looked at your portfolio now, he'd probably be a little bit disappointed in his teachings.
Because there are no gold shares.
Because there's no gold shares, first of all, but just analysing the companies that you're in, because some of them are extremely highly valued by traditional methods.
By traditional, they're highly valued. But you've got to look at, you know, what their sales prospects are, what the industry is. I just find that sticking to you know, too closely to multiples can sometimes be a very detracting feature. You know, just think about Capitec in our own context here, or Richemont, or any of these companies where the purists would always say, oh, no, you know, too expensive, I'm not. Clicks, another company. At the end of the day, you missed out, and it keeps getting more and more expensive. So I'm not really driven by a lot of those prospects. I like to look at the company. There's so many factors that we put together, and those you can only do by doing what the chef said I shouldn't do anymore, is work. You know, in other words, I should be walking on the beach with a dog and grandchildren rather than looking at my screen here. You know, but I think just, you know, even talking to you and, you know, the conversations we have with Viv, those are so important to understand markets, you know, because you go through, so many things on a day-to-day basis, so many iterations of how the market's performing, who's up top, why they're top, why did they fall, and so on. And I can't look at pure ratios. There's so many other things that kind of influence what you do in the market.
So it is different this time, in other words. You could go back 50 years and say to somebody, I'm not using these metrics anymore, and that person would say to you, well, that's ridiculous. These things have been in place since stock markets were first formed. Is it different this time, David? Can you value an AI stock differently?
It's money. It's the flow of money. That's what's different. It's quite crazy just how much money and liquidity there is around, which we never had in the early days. You know, I always tell the story of Warren Buffett. In when he first started to analyze companies, if he wanted information, he had to write to the SEC or to the, you know, the New York Stock Exchange and say, please send me the balance sheet of ABC, you know, whatever company. Yeah. And a week later, or something, it would come in the press, you know, I mean, in the Post. And he'd sit down there and he was able to analyze it and say, oh, this company is trading at a deep discount to its intrinsic value. You can't do that anymore. And so I think that's what's changed. I think the traditional measures are still there. I look very carefully at the income statement and at the balance sheet for debt, you know, income statement for sales and margins and so on. The ratios I put to them, you know, I wouldn't buy like Palantir, which is at a 200 PE or something like that. You know, there are companies which are way ahead of where they should be. But if it's a 30 or a 25 and it should only be down at a 20 or something, you know, that doesn't bother me. Those kind of, you know, that fine tuning doesn't bother me.
Okay.
But I certainly wouldn't buy. I remember when Curo was trading here in the hundreds and 200 P's, you know, then you say that's crazy. That's silly.
Okay, so you're selective when it comes to so-called overvaluations. You've mentioned two companies, two South African companies, Capitec and Clicks, and everybody said, no, don't buy Clicks. If you want a retailer, buy Dischem or buy some other company that is not a pure Clicks play, opposition Clicks play, but something that's cheaper. But no, you would have lost a fortune in comparison.
And we lost a fortune on Capitec for those very reasons.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, and Capitec is now, I don't know, when I looked on Friday, I think it was back as being the biggest bank, you know, on the JSE. I must check whether it's still popped out, you know, overcome First Rand or Standard Bank and that. And it just continues to grow. And its customers love it. Its results are very, you know, attractive. It's going into new areas. But it's a very expensive. So, but the growth has been, you know, outstanding.
Many years ago now, I lived just on the edge of Robertson in the little Karoo. And I used to go into Robertson on a Saturday morning to go to the bank. In those days, you used to go to the bank. I did anyway. I quite liked it because ABSA was empty. But you'd be driving through the town and there'd be a queue. Two blocks long of people going to Capitec. It would be workers, agricultural workers, whatever it is, who got paid weekly in cash or whatever, and they were going to Capitec. They weren't going to any of the big banks, and I'm not singling out ABSA because I'm an ABSA client and they've been good to me. But it was extraordinary, and I should have known then. I think it was about R600 a share at the time, maybe less.
And their customers love them, and the reason is that it's very simple. The offering is very simple, and as opposed to the old traditional banks where you walked into these marble halls and knocked on the door of your bank manager. So it's now valued at R457 billion, which is ahead of First Rand, which is R451, and Standard Bank at R424. Here you are. And, you know, our good old Nedbank is, I don't know where it is, Nedbank's down 119.
Really?
And, you know, ABSA's, I think, even, where's ABSA? I can't find
it. No, it must be bigger
than sorry, 175.
Must be bigger,
now.
Yeah, of course.
175. But, I mean, it was an offshoot of the Bank of Boerland, I think it was. ABSA was Trust Bank and Volkskrant.
The Amalgamated Banks of Southern Africa.
South Africa.
And a lot of people wouldn't know that.
Excluded Boerland, which is now Capitec.
Capitec, silly. David, okay, this is a really good lesson. I'm going to promote this on X later on once it's up. David, very quickly, football, Arsenal last season would have lost that game against Sunderland. They were really, really tough, and they look resilient and play attractive, classy, skillful football at the same time. So you must have been pleased with that. But on the other hand, City were just out of this world.
They were superb. Yeah, they were superb. They frightened me. I think they were so slick and so fast. Mm. And Liverpool were just lost. They just didn't know what to do. And it was rather sad to see Liverpool, but and Doku, he was brilliant,
isn't he? Great!
He was superb. I mean,
where they found him?
I think
they found him from a little French team called Rennes. Little Belgian guy just plying his trade in Ligue 1, in the middle of Ligue 1, and suddenly City come along, pluck him from virtual obscurity. And now look at him. He's a star for the Belgian national team, and he's probably going to be player of the season. He is today what Salah was last season, at the moment anyway.
Yeah, you can't read him. I mean, he's left and right. Mm. You know, it's just brilliant. And fast, incredibly fast.
Mm.
And O'Reilly, whatever his name is, that tall, longer looks, you know, with a funny haircut.
Nick O'Reilly, but, yeah.
Yeah, Nick, he had Seller kind of all bottled up and superb.
Yeah,
I thought they were very good. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've got a two-week break now, David, because it's the internationals again. So there's no football again. So, yeah, I hate that. Has to be done. No. Yeah, I'm sorry to have disappointed you. Anyway, David, I'm going to dash. Thank you very much for your insight.
Okay.
As I said, I'll put it up on X later on, advertise it anyway. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.